Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Back in 1946, 5-year-old Jimmy Hawkins played the role of Tommy in It's a Wonderful Life. Decades later, the film was voted the most inspirational movie of all time by the American Film Institute. But when it hit the silver screen for the Christmas season in 1946, it was a box office flop and lost $500,000, even though it was nominated for 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. By pure happenstance, I was introduced to Jimmy Hawkins at a St. Vincent de Paul summer camp for disadvantaged kids in the hills above Santa Barbara. Come along and join Jimmy Hawkins as he recalls his role as Tommy, insights about Frank Capra, Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, and other cast members. He also talks about his subsequent roles as a teen heartthrob on the Donna Reed Show for 8 seasons. Hawkins starred in the first Elvis movie, Girl Happy, and his subsequent work as a producer. During the course of his career, Hawkins starred in or produced more than 500 movies and TV shows. Hawkins also shares the secret of the belated success and eventual cult-like love of It's a Wonderful Life that didn't take off until the 1970s when someone forgot to renew the copyright.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right.
Jimmy Hawkins, what a pleasure to meet you. I was tipped off that you were Tommy in a movie.
Yes, I had the pleasure of being in a movie called It's a Wonderful Life, which was voted the most inspirational movie of all time by the AFI, American Film Institute. And every Christmas they show it, and it seems to get bigger and bigger. Every Christmas more people are aware of it, and people ask me all the time, why do you think the movie is so popular? Why do people gravitate to it? And I tell them I think it's the message of the movie, and they get to see that each man's life touches so many others. If they weren't around, it would leave an awful hole. And it gives them some hope that they're here for a reason and that they can touch lives if they choose for the better. And if they were taken out of the equation, things wouldn't be the same. And that's what people like about it. It's a Wonderful Life, and of course the great cast that Frank Capra put together with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed, just all the people.
It really was a perfect cast, wasn't it?
It was. It was impeccable.
Can't imagine a change
out. Anybody else in those parts.
Yeah, and I think we all agree that Jimmy was the keystone.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the thing is that it was the first movie he did after being in World War II for 4 years, and same with Frank Capra. Mm-hmm. And they were very nervous. They wondered if they still had it. Jimmy Stewart even told Lionel Barrymore, who played Old Man Potter, he told him that he thinks he's going to quit acting, that after being in World War II and seeing real life, that he just doesn't feel that this means anything. And Lionel Barrymore says, you're wrong. He says, you have a great gift. You can speak to people in the dark for 2 hours, and they'll listen to what you have to say. No. Acting's a great profession. You have a great gift for it. You stay right where you are. And really made Jimmy Stewart feel better about himself while he continued to play this, which turned out to be an iconic role. You know, he was the quintessential common man, everyday guy.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington,
yeah.
Another.
Yeah. That's right. He just was that guy. Mm-hmm. And Capra realized it, and it was his only choice for the part.
When the movie came out, was it an immediate hit?
No, it lost $500,000. It was up for 5 Academy Awards. The Academy recognized that there were great performances, great director, writer, the look of the movie. But it just didn't find an audience. After World War II, people were looking for other types of film.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. I talked to Sheldon Leonard, who played Nick the bartender in the film, and he said the film never changed. The people did. And now the people realize that they need that message more than ever now. It just keeps growing. Mm-hmm. I don't go any place that when they find out that I was associated and played the youngest Bailey kid, they just can't believe somebody's alive from the movie. But it found its audience.
What do you remember of the filming? Do you remember being on the set?
Oh, yeah, I remember everything.
Really?
It's kind of funny. I've had just a terrific career as an actor in the motion picture business. And to be associated with that, I've done over 500 movies and TV shows, and It's a Wonderful Life just rose to the top. I don't care how long I was on different series or co-star with Elvis and did all the major TV shows. That is the one everybody wants to know about, gravitates to. Sure, they like to hear, well, how was Elvis? How was Ricky Nelson? How was Donna Reed? Because I was reunited with Donna Reed on the Donna Reed Show. I did the very first episode, and 8 years later, I was still doing the show. So I got to be very close with her. I sat on the board of her foundation for 25 years. And
was she as much of a sweetheart as she appeared to be?
Better.
Really?
You know, it was her show. She really was the producer. She had all control, never exercised any displeasure in front of anybody. But it was a great running set. It was fun, a lot of humor. Nobody was, you know, thinking they were making Gone with the Wind or anything.
Right, right.
But she was a real, very nice lady.
A memorable person and interaction on your time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, she was. You know, won the Academy Award From Here to Eternity. Her Donna Reed series lasted 8 seasons, quite a run, but deservingly. Just worked very hard and for the show and showing women in different roles, and then got into her politics about mothers against the war. She thought they should have different things, the way they could run things. Secretary of War, why can't they have a Secretary of Peace, she wondered. So, nice lady.
Let's go back in time to Tommy. It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the things that you remember.
I remember getting up real early in the morning. I'm 4 and a half years of age. You know, the half a year was a big deal at 4. You know.
Yeah, right. 4 3/4.
Yeah. Yes, right. So I took buses and streetcars through L.A. out to Culver City, where they shot the film.
You were with your mom?
Yeah, uh-huh. It's right after World War II. I remember coming on the stage, huge stage, and the Bailey home was there. And there was real snow that they had outside of the home on the set. And I thought that was interesting. Walk on the set, there's that Christmas tree. And then I'd be with my siblings. We'd go to makeup, but, you know, kids didn't really need that much makeup back then. They liked more natural look. And then we'd have a school teacher, welfare worker on the set, so that 3 hours would be dedicated to schooling. And then when they needed us on the set, we'd rehearse. Now, I have a line that's become very popular where I pull on Jimmy Stewart's coattails and I keep saying, excuse me.
You should see it. Well, what's the matter with our car? Isn't it good enough for you?
Steady. Excuse me. Excuse me.
Excuse you for what?
I burped. He's now going upstairs and see if those dudes want to.
Excuse me, excuse me. And then he's really ticked off. He finds out that he's lost $8,000. It's bankruptcy, it's shame, everything. He's got all this going on in his mind. And he says, excuse you for what? And I said, I burped. Well, this is a line that was not in the script. Frank Capra, when we were coming out of the living room going to the kitchen, he rehearsed everybody and we started walking. And then he said, okay, everybody stop. So then he'd squat down, talk to me one-on-one. He said, see where we are right now? See the spot we're in? Everybody's standing there. When you get here, I want you to pull on your daddy. That man is pretending he's your daddy. Pull on his coattails and say, excuse me, when you get right here on this spot. Do you understand that now? I said, yes, sir. He said, okay, everybody, let's go. So they started their dialogue. He said, everybody, stop. He said, you see where we are? Scrunch down again and squat down and talk to me face to face. You see where we are here now? We were over there. He said, excuse me. Now we're here. When you get to this spot, keep pulling on his coattail and say, excuse me again. Got that? Oh, yeah.
Did they have literal marks?
Not in long shots, just close-ups. So you, as an actor, get used to that because then there's a key light for you. So we shot the scene. Rehearsed it a couple more times, all in one motion. And he said, okay, we're ready to shoot it, and shot it and did it. And I said to him years later, I said, you know, when we shot that, what was the most difficult scene in the movie? He said, that scene with all you kids, with your older brother asking, how do you spell this? The girl, your sister pounding on the piano.
Yeah.
You, excuse me. And he said, all that could be funny. And this is a serious scene with humor in it, but you couldn't have the people laughing at you. They had to laugh with you. And he said that was the most difficult to stage. I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, but I missed one of the excuse me's that you asked me to do. Why did you print it? He said, because it seemed natural, and I liked the way it was. I said, oh, okay.
Talk to us a little bit about Frank Capra. What a bigger-than-life character in Hollywood history.
Oh, yeah. He just knew what he was doing. He could tap dance, which means, I'll tell you, for instance, he was looking for locations for the movie. And they took him over to Beverly Hills High School in their gymnasium to shoot the scene where they're Charleston dancing and everything. And he meets Donna Reed as an older girl now, 18. He's looking over the place, and the AD came up to him. He said, Frank, do you know under this basketball court is a swimming pool? He said, what? He said, yeah, there's a swimming pool under. He said, well, open it up. Let's see. So they told him, open it up. He saw that, and that's where he wrote the whole scene about them dancing and falling into the pool. You know, it wasn't written. It just happened, and he took advantage of things like that. Not, gee, it's too bad. We could have a scene. Well, no. They're going to be a scene. That's going to cap this thing off where they fall in the pool together. And he just was very sharp. The excuse me line, that was a family joke in his own personal family. One of his youngest kids would always do that. Oh, excuse me. Well, okay, now we say excuse you for what? I burped and the family laughed. So he put that in the movie. The night before, he said, I think I'll have the Tommy Bailey character say that. It just happened. Just he could see what was happening and then adjust to it.
And I think that you hit it on the head as a metaphor for you, in that in the movie, there is that relaxed and believable element of all the actors and actresses.
Right. And the people say, well, did you know that this movie was going to do what it did? No. It was another day's work for all those actors you saw on it. They appreciated it. They loved it. They loved working with Capra and Jimmy Stewart, blending there, Bert the Cop or the taxi driver.
Oh, he was a great character.
Oh, yeah. Frank Phelan, nice people. You get to know him and working with them in later years.
The uncle that had
Uncle
Bert.
Billy.
Yeah,
Billy.
He was so lovable.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was, I mean, just a great actor from Gone with the Wind. I mean, whenever they needed a good actor. And Capra knew them all. And he knew where they would be best. Henry Travers as Clarence the Angel. You can't think of anybody else. You know, he saw his casting list. But, you know, he just had that touch. I can't imagine how disappointing that film was, his first film with his own company, with his partners. And his partner had another film to direct. And they both started the films off on the same day and both sent each other's telegram. One was doing It's a Wonderful Life and the other was doing The Best Years of Our Life. And they were both up for the Best Picture. Wow. You know, it was just, and they here partners on other projects.
Interesting. And it's just incredible, like you said earlier, that it was a flop financially.
It was. And it just fell in. Somebody forgot to pick up the copyright in the 70s. And then it became public domain. And that means TV stations all over the United States could play it for free. And they did. They could charge for it.
And they do.
Yeah. So it was a fluke that it fell in and then found its audience. And people started having It's a Wonderful Life parties. They had trivia games. It just grew and grew and grew. And it's such a thing to watch. It's a Wonderful Life has taken me places. I rang the bell at the Stock Exchange in New York.
When did you do that?
It was about maybe 8-9 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, you see all these high rollers, and they couldn't believe that the Bailey kids were on that podium with the president of the New York Stock Exchange ringing that bell. It was great to push that button. It was great. It was just, That's what's fun about it. Places that you never thought you'd ever go.
Back to Elvis.
Well, like all actors, we go on interviews. And I was known for being the boyfriend of, you know, every girl on television. 3 years on Petticoat Junction. I did the Leave It to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet, of course. 8 years on Donna Reed. And my three sons. So I was known for playing the boyfriend. So they got a call and they wanted to see me out at MGM for an Elvis movie. So I was sitting there talking to the director and the producer, Joe Pasternak, and in the casting place that I had been since I was 2 years old. MGM did films with Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. And
so you literally grew up in Hollywood then?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Were your parents involved?
No, my mom's father was one of the original Keystone Cops.
Oh, wow.
And so she just always wanted her kids in the picture business. My brother was in it before I was, and then I'd follow up. And so I was sitting there, you know, talking about, you know, how you do on interviews with the director. And all of a sudden the producer turned to me, Joe Pasternak, and he said, "Were you on Petticoat Junction last week?" I said, "Well, yes, I was." He turned to the room, he said, "He can play anything. Just explain to him what the parts are. He'll tell you who he's right for." And he said, "Okay, we'll be calling you to set up a meeting with the director, and, you know, thank you for coming in." Came in a week later, the director explained Elvis had three sidekicks in a band, and he explained to me which the three were. And I told him, "Well, I think I'd be best for this part." Okay. So they had signed me first for the picture, and I thought,
very which important. Picture was this?
This the first Elvis movie is Girl Happy. Then I did Spin Out with him afterwards. But the main thing, it got me into older roles.
You're no longer the teenage boyfriend.
Right. Yeah. And I said, now, if I think I can be Elvis's friend, that means that they're thinking of me as being a little older.
Was Elvis approachable? Were you ever able to hang out with him and talk to him?
Yeah, Shelley Fabre was the leading lady in the film. And, of course, I was her boyfriend for 8 years on the Donna Reed Show. She was my girlfriend when I was under contract to Gene Autry to do the Annie Oakley series. And so I'd known Shelley since we were kids. Now, she's playing his leading lady, and I'm his sidekick. And so we'd kind of hang out. And then we both would talk about, "Can you believe this? I mean, here we are with Elvis. Wow." And all of a sudden, we were sitting in my dressing room, and the door knocked on the door. These portable dressing rooms they have on the stage. They don't want the actors leaving, you know. They know, give them a dressing room. So we both look up, and it's Elvis. No entourage, no anything.
Just walks in.
Just, yeah. He said, "Can I join you?" Yeah. I look at Shelley. Wow. So, you know, he sat there until we were needed for the next shot and just talked and talked and talked. And he was always doing that after weekends. He would take karate lessons on the weekends. Then he'd show us his newest movements. "What do you think of this?" And very approachable, very nice, very humble. Wasn't, "I'm Elvis, you're nobody." He was just a very, very nice person. It's just sad the way it ended.
Yeah.
Because he was a nice person.
Who were some of the other actors and actresses that touched you?
Well, for me, I did one of the very first family shows on television in the late 40s. I did that for 3.5 years with an actor by the name of Charlie Ruggles. Now, he was a big star in the 30s and 40s, big movie star. And he came to television, and they had a situation comedy. Family. I played one of twins, had an older brother and sister, of course a mom, and we did that live for ABC. That was on the ABC network, and it was live. So I've just had a wonderful life myself, a great career, and here I get to talk with you and share stories, and well, I like that.
Well, I love it too, because like a lot of people that you know, you've been a part of my life for my whole life, but I never got to meet Tommy. So
that's pretty nice cool. To say, yeah. Now I get to meet you, so works both ways.
It does. Jimmy Hawkins, thank you so much. What a wonderful day.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Jimmy Hawkins, thanks again.
Okay, best to you, Tom.
You've been listening to Jimmy Hawkins, who played the 5-year-old Tommy in It's a Wonderful Life, the 1946 Capra classic. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.